Wake up.
I would like to call to order the Grover Beach City Council meeting. This is Tuesday, January 17th. And I would ask that you all please stand and join me and the rest of the council in a moment of silence. Thank you very much. Please remain standing. And we are honored this evening. We have a young lady from Grover Heights Elementary School, Grace Mullis, who is going to come forward and lead us in the flag salute. Grace is 9 years old and a fourth grade student at Grover Heights Elementary School. She enjoys art projects and, believe it or not, recess at school. Grace says that living on the Central Coast is amazing. The weather is nice and the sunsets are beautiful. Grace enjoys collecting rocks and shells on the Central Coast. Grace is looking forward to taking music lessons and would like... City Attorney, could you please give us a report on closed session?
Certainly, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. On Tuesday, January 3rd, after meeting in closed session regarding three items, one legal counsel conference pending litigation, another one with real property negotiations regarding an AT&T land lease, and a last one also regarding real property negotiations on a Hillcrest Tower Crown Castle lease. City Council reconvened into open session and announced there were no reportable actions taken in closed session.
Thank you, sir. The next item on the agenda is the agenda review. At this time, the Council will review the order of business and receive requests to make announcements regarding any changes. Should there be any changes in the agenda?
Well, if seeing no changes, I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion passes 4-0. Next item on the agenda is our ceremonial calendar. And we have a proclamation. It's Jerome Ross. We have a plaque here, Certificate of Appreciation, a proclamation, which states that the City of Grover Beach, proclamation, appreciation to Jerome Ross. Whereas Jerome Ross has served the City of Grover Beach in the Public Works Department since July 13, 1987. And whereas Jerome Ross served as equipment maintenance worker from July 13, 1987 until being promoted to equipment mechanic on July 1, 1992, where he served until being promoted once again to his final position as city mechanic on March 20, 2001. And whereas Jerome Ross was nominated by his peers as Public Works Employee of the Year every year but one between 2002 and 2011. Amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Whereas Jerome Ross was recognized by the executive management team as the, quote, Public Works Department Employee of the Year in 2007 and again in 2011. and whereas Jerome Ross retired from the city of Grover Beach after nearly 25 years of service on December 28, 2011, and whereas the City Council is appreciative of the time, effort, and talent Mr. Ross dedicated to the city of Grover Beach during his nearly 25 years of service. Now, therefore, be resolved that the Grover Beach City Council does hereby recognize and commend Jerome Ross, acknowledging his 20 years of dedicated and outstanding service to his fellow employees, the city of Grover Beach, and our citizens. In witness thereof, we have hereunto set my hand, signed by the Mayor John Scholes. Congratulations, young man. Great job.
No, just thank you, and I've enjoyed my time here, and we'll miss everybody.
Mr. Mayor, if I could,
yes,
I don't want to let Jerry just go away like this. I want to commend him. I want to say, first of all, what's on that proclamation doesn't convey all that you've really contributed to the city. And I wanted you to know from the staff how much that has been appreciated. Jerry and I were talking the other day, and he said, I asked him, I said, well, when you came to work here, how long did you expect to stay? And he says, well, I was just going to stay a while. Well, obviously a while turned into a lot longer. And the part of it that few people recognize is as Jerry has been a real out-of-the-box thinker. I mean, there have been times when he's just been able to make things work. One of the
Thank you, Jerry. Okay, the next item on the agenda is public communications. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes. Total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. Council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items not on the agenda. And I have a form here. Kay Rosen.
Good evening. I'm Kay Rosen, and I live in Grover Beach. My address is on record, and this issue has been tabled a long time ago. But I'm here representing Golden West Garden Homes, and it's regarding the vacation rental issue that's been tabled. And we collected 107 signatures for a petition, and basically what we're here tonight. Golden West Garden Homes are senior twin homes that are bordered by Janet Avenue, Anita Avenue, Rebecca, and Lynn. And I gave several copies out of our petition, and what we're asking is that when you do consider this issue again, that we, the undersigned, would like to bring to your attention that any proposal to include this area in any vacation rental plan would adversely affect our senior community, consisting of many citizens 80 years plus of age. It would create a safety hazard to our citizens, who often walk in the street, and noise nuisance to a population that go to bed early, as well as many other problems. Our experience has been that owners of vacation rentals do not abide by our CC&Rs. They really don't care. They're just there for the money. We do not have any provision to block vacation rentals in our CC&Rs. And it would be a great financial burden to redo them. Because property values are low, including us in vacation rental opportunity, would be an invitation for investors to buy up our homes. And that's already happened. And we are having a problem in our area with vacation rentals. We ask that you do officially exclude this area of homes in any decision that you make in the future regarding vacation rentals. And again, I did give some copies of our petition to Bob and to you, Ms.
Yes.
Nichols. And I have 42 seconds. Now I'm going to represent myself. My husband and I drove in the city to look at what was proposed west of 4th Street. And I think as a citizen of Grover Beach, it's absolutely ridiculous to have vacation rentals any place in Grover Beach. It is not set up for vacation rentals. And I think if I owned one of those really nice homes up there on the hill west of 4th Street, I'd be really upset to have a vacation rental next to me. I would encourage you as a council to just nix that idea. Grover Beach does not need vacation rentals. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody else wish to come up?
Mayor Pro Tem, Council, my name is Brad Snook from our county's chapter of the Surfrider Foundation. Some news on our chapter. We had executive committee elections in our last meeting. I was voted chair. Jennifer Joswick and Jennifer Blonder, both of whom have spoken to the council here, are also on the executive committee, along with Carol Georgie, who's our treasurer, and Shelby, president. I had the pleasure of being at the IWMA meeting last week and the vote, and it was exciting. It was 4 hours long, but it was cool. It was great, and really appreciate the outcome and the council support of the resolution or the regulation. Some of the people that played a key role from Surfrider are Victoria Kranz, who also worked with Sierra Club, and Jeff Sproul, who helped to educate a lot of business owners and other people up in North County. Some of the concerns that we heard from the opposition during that meeting, one of them was need to do more education, and I think that's something that Surfrider does well. I mean, we have many campaigns, and we have ISMO, some of which are allowing the dogs to run around in the dunes and do their business without picking up after them. There's ways that we can do that better. So we'll be around. We appreciate hearing from the council. Any ideas you'd like to help work on these campaigns, certainly available. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Brad. Is there anyone else in public who would like to come forward? If not, I am going to close public communication, bring it back to the council. The next item on the agenda, there are no public hearings this evening, is our consent agenda.
Honorable Mayor, staff would request that item 4 be pulled and continue to the next meeting, as we do not have a quorum to vote on that item.
Thank you, Council. We will pull item 4, and it will be carried over until the next meeting. Thank you.
I'll move that we accept the consent agenda as presented, with the exception of item 4 to be carried forward at the next meeting.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries 4-0. We next will entertain a motion on the consent agenda. But that was your motion, right?
That was a motion,
to
yeah.
To approve it, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Let's move on to the next item, which is our regular business item number 4.
Five. Well, it's 4 now, isn't it?
5. Sorry.
We'll keep you in line, don't you fret.
Thank you. Mr.
No
Perot?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, the purpose of this particular item is to review the status of the water and stormwater funds and make recommendations regarding the adjustment of water rates and the establishment of a fee to cover the cost of stormwater services. During the discussions of the FY12 budget, staff brought to the council's attention that there might be a need to adjust the water rates during the course of the year, and it was a situation that we would have to continue to monitor. Also, during the same budget presentations, we also discussed the fact that the Stormwater Fund has been operating without a revenue source for a number of years, and that is something that needed to be addressed. So I'd like to cover both the Water Fund and then the Stormwater Fund as a part of this report. As adopted, the FY12 Water Fund budget reflects an estimated revenues of $2,825,661 and expenditures of $3,051,847. Capital costs associated with that budget were $100,000, and meter replacement was budgeted at $105,000. At the time that the budget was adopted, we recognized that there was a deficit of $196,186. At that time as well, the council had authorized staff to, council agency had authorized the city to proceed with the bond issue by the redevelopment agency that would in fact have paid back the waterfront a loan amount of $900,000. A portion of that was to be used to offset the actual capital costs, or at least that's what we thought at the time, and that there would therefore not be a need to adjust water rates during the course of the year. Well, as we know, with the redevelopment agency going away and that loan action has in fact been halted at this time, and so consequently the $900,000 repayment to the water fund is not available to handle any of the capital costs. In addition to this, good news is that on the expenditure side, well, I should mention that water sales, while are lower than projected, have been steadily improving. They're still projected to be off from what was originally contained in the budget, but we are seeing people actually purchasing more water, largely because of the dry spell those last 2 months. On the expenditure side, salaries, personnel costs, supplies, and services continue to trend downward from budgeted amounts, which is the good news. And additionally, as previously pointed out, the city is going to receive the benefit in accordance with state law. As you will recall, 218 requires that essentially a protest be hearing after a 45-day notice is provided to all of the property owners and accounts within the city. That protest hearing is available to review the rates, and should those protests not achieve a 51% majority, then the rates are then approved. Staff is recommending the 10% across the board adjustment at this time. It would net in the remaining 3 months that we have in this fiscal year approximately $125,000. That would not be sufficient, obviously, to cover the operating deficit as we see it, but it would start leave us in a much better position as we begin the next fiscal year. The other point about this is that when we went through the adjustment last time, if you'll recall, the adjustment was split in two 15% amounts, as I recall. It really, the rates need to be reviewed on an annual basis. And that way you can eliminate the prospect of having to have these significant adjustments. So we would suggest that as a common policy that these rates continue to be reviewed on an annual basis. And now relative to the Stormwater Fund, the Stormwater Fund was actually established several years ago. The Stormwater Fund was set up to track costs associated both with the permitting and the operation of the Stormwater Fund. The Stormwater Fund is a regulated enterprise. It's regulated by the Regional Water Quality Control Board and is subject to essentially the same kind of permitting process that the wastewater treatment plant is, just to give you an indication. In the past, the water fund has averaged a cost of about $50,000 per year. Primarily, those dollars have been dedicated to the actual physical maintenance of the system. That's cleaning storm drains, doing repairs as may be needed, cleaning out retention basins, that sort of thing. The cost is expected to rise significantly in the coming year, and that's largely because we recently received a new permit, NPDES permit, and as you will recall, we went through that process a couple of years ago because at the time we indicated that the requirements of that permit were going to be significant, and from a cost-wise perspective, they added a whole set of additional duties and responsibilities that the city has to carry out. At this particular time, we need to move along with compliance with that permitting process, with those permit requirements, and we estimate those costs are approximately $150. So we have previously discussed the option of combining the Stormwater Fund and the Wastewater Fund, and again, that's largely because they're regulated by the same agency, the Regional Water Quality Board, and they both deal with the same kind of permit. Again, that's the NPDES permit. Costs, as I have noted in the past, have been covered either have been advanced to the wastewater to the Stormwater Fund by the Wastewater Fund and the General Fund. And realistically, those are advances that should not continue. Actually, the choices for funding stormwater are essentially to establish an independent fee to cover those costs, or really your only other option would be to take it out of the general fund, and given the status of the general fund, that's not really practical at this point either. Staff is recommending that the Stormwater Fund be combined with the Wastewater Fund and that, again, a Proposition 218 hearing process be completed. Staff is recommending that a stormwater fee be set at $4.55 per wastewater account. This would raise the wastewater portion of the utility bill by $9.10 on that reserve.
It's estimated that at the end of this fiscal year there would be approximately $2.4 million, but that's the wastewater, not stormwater.
Right. I'm just talking about the wastewater. Okay. So $2.4 million, and that's without an increase.
That is just for the stormwater system itself.
And that's the reserve amount?
That's the reserve amount. Correct. We have some very old lines, and if they start failing, we could go through that very quickly.
Okay. Thank you. And when was the last increase in the wastewater fee?
Several years ago.
It was in the mid-1990s, I believe, for the waste.
Several years ago.
There was a increase that was associated with the South County Sanitation. At one time, we had their fee was embedded in ours. So the only fees that have been increased since the mid-90s were the fees that are associated with
mid-90s.
The district.
Okay. So I guess my question is here. Regarding the loan to the RDA,
mm-hmm.
a $900,000 loan mm-hmm. from the water fund
right
to the RDA,
right.
I don't understand why we cannot expect to get those funds back. I mean, those funds were not part of a tax increment. They were actually ratepayer fees that were used as to fund a startup fund for the RDA. How is it that we cannot expect to get those funds back?
Well, it's because when AB X 26 was legislated, and again, that's recently been upheld by the Supreme Court, it expressly said that those loans, internal loans, would not be recognized. The only caveat, the only small caveat to that is there is one portion of AB 26 that says that essentially the city will have the opportunity to argue its case, if you will, with the successor agency. But outside of that, a loan would not be recognized once the agency comes to an end.
Hmm. Well, that's just disgraceful. Okay. That's not a question, is it? Now I've moved to the stormwater fund. When we say that the FY13 costs are expected to rise by $150,000, basically we're talking about an unfunded mandate.
Yes.
For public
absolutely.
Education, is that what it is?
Well, there is a whole series of items that are required. It includes public education and outreach. It's the establishment of an illicit discharge detection program, the monitoring of erosion and sediment controls associated with development, inlet stenciling. Stormwater ordinance has to be rewritten, updated with enforcement administration components. General permit requirements are required to be put into a local ordinance. Participation with a partners group and annual documentation of our best management practice efforts, annual reporting, which is fairly significant, general permit administration, operation, and of course the operation, ongoing operation and maintenance of city basins, commercial industrial regulation and inspection, preparation and updating of a stormwater master plan, and a municipal operations plan with specific maintenance policies and requirements, additional staff training, and that just gives you a list of the types of requirements that we didn't have to deal with in the past. In the past, primarily, it was a physical maintenance program.
Right.
And now it's become much, much more than that.
So basically, we're talking about a lot of staff time in order to report to the Regional Water Quality Board.
That's obviously a portion of this cost.
So what happens if we just say no?
Well, we tried that. If you just say no, and that's an option that the council has. First of all, just so you recall, we did appeal mm-hmm. the imposition of this permit and its requirements. We were overturned here at the local level, and then we actually appealed to the state board. At that time, the state board refused to hear the item altogether, so that the permit stood in place. The option at the time may help to hold some of the costs down, particularly in the areas of public education and outreach, because there's a lot of things that will come out of that group that we won't have to duplicate on our own.
Right, but still the reporting aspect and so on will be...
Still, you're required to individually report.
Okay. Thank you. I think that's it for now. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Comment, questions? I have a couple of questions. So following on from Council Member Bright's question, the amount that was loaned to the redevelopment agency was $900,000?
Actually, $906,000.
If that was repaid by the state, would we then still have to do this increase?
Well, the problem is, if you recall, at the time we were trying to proceed with the issuance of a bond issuance that, had that been successful, we would have used the proceeds to repay the water fund. And though that repayment could only be used for public projects, so obviously making that work with the current water fund situation was a good fit. The problem that you have now is it's not necessarily the state that would repay us. It would be the successor agency that would allow those payments to continue. We have actually in place, because we have adopted loan documents between the city and the agency, we actually have debt service payments in place. Those debt service payments would possibly continue if the successor agency would allow them to. And I don't recall what the debt service payments were. I think they were somewhere in the neighborhood of $40,000 to $50,000 a year until the debt was repaid. So obviously, even if that happened, it wouldn't be sufficient to cover this, the current deficit that we have.
Thank you. And if I could just clarify then, so we're looking at a water bill which comes out every 2 months. You gave us a figure in the staff report that we received with the agenda, that it sounded like the average person would have an increase in their water usage of about $8, and then everybody, regardless, would have this roughly $9 increase every 2 months.
The total, you're correct, would be about $16 every 2 months, I think is what I said.
Okay. And I do have a question, and I apologize for not giving you some advance notice, but for our finance wizard over there, for Ms. Chapman. Is it possible? One of the things that I've noticed is when I paid water bills on half an acre lot with a 2,300 square foot home, they weren't that much difference, because I'm so frugal, than they are in a 550 square foot condo with no yard. In other words, my base rate, no matter what I do, it's going to go from $50 a month to $60 a month. If I never flush a toilet, if I never drink a glass of water or wash a dish, I still pay that much out. And I'm wondering if it's even feasible to do any change of how that's weighted. In other words, there are a whole lot of other fees associated with using the water that aren't related to actual water consumption. So is it possible? I don't know if those are...
It would be possible, but the rate per unit would basically skyrocket. So someone who does have a 3/4-inch meter in a residential home could end up paying more than what they are now, or more than with the increase. And I would have to actually go through and calculate that if we were to put it all on a tiered system and change the amounts that are based per the meter size, mm-hmm. and actually build that into the water rates, which one city locally has done, and that's Paso Robles. They do everything that it based on a per rate charge. In the first 20 units, I believe, in Paso Robles is at one rate, and then it tiers up. But they start at like $5 or $6 per unit of usage.
So that's you were predicating that on it would be a lot more expensive for the people with a 3/4-inch. Why wouldn't it be more expensive for the people with a 1/2-inch?
Probably would be.
It probably would be.
Okay.
And we don't have any 1/2-inch. It's 5/8 3/4.
Excuse me. Yeah. 5/8 3/4. Thank you. Okay. That's all my questions for now. Okay.
Ms. Mulder.
Thank you. How do our current rates compare with other cities?
Still.
Okay. If there are no further questions, this is a business item, and I would like to open it to the public. Do we have anybody in the public that would like to comment on this issue? There being none, then let's bring it back to the board. And we're open for comments. Ms. Mulder.
Thank you. I just want to say that my profession is bookkeeping, and I deal with a lot of cities in California. And I have seen excessive increases in stormwater funds happening in a lot of towns. And to be honest, $9.10 is nothing compared to what a lot of cities are charging. And I know it's difficult to have to fit this into your budget, but at the same time, we are actually being really conservative here. I have a client in Stockton who's charged $45 for every water bill every month for their stormwater, and they call it the storm drain owner fee, which I found very interesting. And it just showed up one day for him, and it's happening all over. And it's how cities are dealing with these requirements that are being made to us by the state. Thank you.
Comment?
Yeah, I agree that it's something that we're going to have to address, and I think that a good part of the reason we have to address it is because of the state's unfunded mandate. So more than 50% of the increase would be because of that unfunded mandate. And then another good chunk of it, we didn't quite get a percentage on it, but another good chunk of it is because the state has abolished redevelopment agencies and made it impossible for us to meet our commitments to ourselves, as it were. So I wanted to make that point. And also, I would like the council to consider whether we maybe ought to look at the balance, because I think that we're skewing the balance not toward water use. The actual water rates are very, very low, but if you're in a lower income bracket, $20 every 2 months can make a difference. It can make a difference maybe between having heat or gas as opposed to water. And I think that there's an unequal balance in the way the bills are put together, so that no matter what you do, if you don't use a drop of water, you're going to be paying $60 every 2 months for the privilege of having water. And that's not a lot of money. It's a dollar a day when you break it down, but it still seems to me like we ought to maybe look at the balance. And obviously that would be a council decision. But if we're trying to encourage people to conserve water, there's absolutely no incentive to conserve water if your basic bill is going to be $60 no matter what you do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Karen?
Thank you. Well, this to me is just so incredibly disturbing that people have to open up their pocketbooks again because the state requires us to do so. On the other hand, they're taking money out of our other pocket. It just is just so disturbing. And the fact that we can't do anything about it really upsets me. On the other hand, I am concerned about we're asking for two increases at the same time. We've asked people to conserve water, which they have done. Mm-hmm. And now, because our water fund isn't getting the money it should, now we're being penalized for conserving water. I think that we have a healthy reserve. I mean, that reserve is close to our general fund reserve. I don't believe that at this point in time we need to. I just don't think that we need to put a greater burden on our residents. I understand. I don't agree with, but I understand the stormwater necessity. That's something that we're going to have to do. It's required by the state. If we don't, we don't really know what's going to happen, but something that won't be good. So I would be in favor of initiating the stormwater fund assessment, combining both of the funds. But I just don't see where I could really support a water rate adjustment at this time, not both of them.
I'm wondering if I could butt in here. If the wastewater fund, which has all the money in it, is not the same as the stormwater fund.
Right.
Or the water fund.
Or the water fund. If I could clarify,
okay.
The $2 million is associated with the sewer fund or the wastewater fund. The water fund actually has no reserves right now.
Okay.
That's why we need to make that kind of an adjustment. Eventually, you know, the goal is get us back to a point where we have a sufficient reserve, which would mean covering your operations and having about a 10% reserve. Wastewater fund and the stormwater fund,
which is also like a wastewater,
is a little bit closer. Okay. They have different permitting requirements, et cetera.
Okay, well, thank you.
Right.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Then why can't we do, like we did in the past, a two-step, since the stormwater combination wastewater fund has a reserve, because we're going to combine them, I'm pretty sure. Why don't we just go forward with just the water fund increase and then later down the line do the wastewater fund increase?
Well, Mr. Mayor, if I could, my recommendation would be to still set a line item budget for the stormwater. And again, that's because right now the ratepayers and the reserves that have been set up in the sewer fund have been set up predicated on the operation of just the sewer system itself. So all those dollars that have been collected have been collected for the operation of the sewer or wastewater system. The stormwater is, although similar, is slightly different, and to use dollars that have already been collected for wastewater operations wouldn't be appropriate for stormwater operations. I know that's a bit confusing.
No, I understand that. Then how have we been collecting money in the stormwater fund all this time?
We haven't. That's the problem, is that essentially we have operated that fund. Up until this point, those costs have been about $50,000-$55,000 a year, again, because under the old system, all we did was basically maintain our physical system. And essentially what we did is, in those years, as a part of the budget, we simply advanced dollars from either the wastewater fund or the general fund to the stormwater fund, so it had something to operate on. What should have happened and didn't happen is that we really needed to identify a separate source of funding for the stormwater fund. When the fund was first established, that would have been the appropriate thing to do at the time.
Okay, all right. Then, just to go back to the 10% increase for the water, is that on each tier, each level?
Yes, it would be each tier.
Yes.
The other thing I would mention tonight, obviously, just so you know, you're not setting rates tonight. You're providing the guidance for the hearing, the 218 hearing. And after you've heard testimony, you still will have an opportunity to adjust those fees as you may see fit.
Good point.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. The only thing I don't think you commented on is the credit we got on the Lopez Lake. Would you comment on that, please?
Yeah, I did reference it in the staff report more or less quickly, but you know, it's one of the factors that has allowed us, believe it or not, to minimize the deficit. That may sound contradicting, but without that credit, realistically, that we'd be looking at a deficit that would be $30,000 more. We've taken that into account in terms of our projections through the end of the fiscal year.
Thank you. Okay, if we have no further discussion, I'm ready for a motion.
Well, okay. I'll make a motion then. We authorize staff to proceed with combining the wastewater and stormwater fund and direct that a Proposition 218 hearing be held to consider an adjustment of 10% to the water rates and the establishment of a stormwater fee amounting to $455 per month per wastewater account.
I could second that, but I wonder if since this is also partly directing staff, if we could ask them, and this is subject to everybody's agreement, but if we could ask them to look at perhaps give us some examples of or an example of varying the way that the charges are done. In other words, the balance between charging for use and the addition, the other charges.
Well, I think basically because...
Okay, hold on just a minute.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I would prefer to ask staff to do that after we finish with the motion. Let's go ahead
okay.
with the motion and finish that. That's something that we can ask staff to
mm-hmm. do. We can give direction. Okay. Well, I'll second then.
Prop 218 hearing notice. So it would delay the Prop 218 hearing, which could end up making it necessary to make it higher than a 10% rate, unfortunately. The 10% rate is lower than what we were projecting at the first quarter because we've been had such a dry year.
Mr. Mayor, could I ask that the city attorney comment?
Yes, please.
Only to the extent that the motion to move forward the 218 hearing was voted on, and so if that is going to change, in other words, if the direction of the entire council is going to change with regard to how the Prop 218 notice is presented, and the notice is attached.
Okay,
we would need to either withdraw the motion and then bring this item back to you for further review. And staff perhaps misunderstood the intent of the direction originally. If the council wishes to revise how the rates are proposed, then as finance director identified, we would have to go back, recalculate everything. The amount of money that is necessary to balance the rates or provide sufficient income to maintain these it will be the same. And all we're doing is potentially showing you different ways of shifting where that allocation falls. But the amount that is necessary to be raised
remains
will not change. But if that is your direction, then I would suggest that the maker of the motion withdraw it and then that we start over.
Okay. What?
I actually disagree with what council member here wants to do. Why complicate matters? Gayla, I mean, I actually don't understand part of what you're asking us to do. Can you explain to me what she's asking?
What I believe Councilmember Peterson wants us to do is to look at the total amount that's needed for the water fund to set up a tiered rate system and do away with the individual rates based on the meters. According to the Tuckfield study, which I pulled out, the proposed fixed charges are based on the American Water Works Association and are herein recognized that the cost to supply water and the rate and quantity of demand is higher for larger meters. And that's why larger meters have a higher cost associated with them.
I didn't actually say anything about larger meters. That seems to have crept in here. What I'm saying is that the bills are really heavily weighted towards everybody paying a certain base rate, and they're not weighted as heavily on usage. So if you use almost no water, you're going to be paying $60 every 2 months. So I would prefer to see that the people who are using no water get a bigger benefit, and the people who are using water pay for the privilege of using the water, pay for the usage. I don't think that we need to hogtie everybody right now on this. I will bring it back next year, and because if we're going to be looking at water increases every year, I would like to see it considered for future.
I think we've carried this far enough. Mm-hmm. We either need to withdraw the motion and start over, and if the rest of the council agrees with that, we will do that. Ms. Molnar, what did you agree or disagree?
Leave it as it stands.
Well, I made the motion.
Yes.
I don't want to withdraw it. I think that
Good.
The public is going to weigh in on this, and that's what I want to see. So,
Very good. And I agree. We're going to leave it the way it is.
I'll jump up and down more later.
Thank you.
Next year.
Okay. That's finished. Let's move on to item number 6, which is a discussion regarding placing a measure on the June 2012 ballot regarding the removal of term limits from the office of the directly elected mayor. Mr. Perot.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, as you've indicated, this item is a discussion as to whether or not to place a matter before the voters regarding the elimination of term limits. That it was expressly brought up at our last meeting, and the request was tied to the directly elected mayor's position. As the council will recall, in 2006, the Grover Beach voters approved a ballot measure providing for a directly elected mayor. And as a part of that measure, voters chose a two-year term over a four-year term for the office of the mayor. The measure in 2006 did not address term limits. Term limits is covered, however, under Article 2, Chapter 3 of the Municipal Code, which provides that a person may serve as a council member and or a mayor for two consecutive terms per position. As noted, Mayor Nichols' alternative is shall the current term limit of two consecutive two-year terms for the office of the elected mayor be eliminated, yes and no. As an alternative to that, stated, shall the current term limit of two consecutive two-year terms for a total of 4 years for the office of the directly elected mayor be modified to a term limit of four consecutive two-year terms for a total of eight years, yes or no. In finalizing this discussion, the council, I'm sure, is aware, as pointed out, the municipal code provides term limits for both council members and mayor, and there offers an opportunity for the council to think about the rescission of term limits in general, and I've also offered an alternative set of language to deal with that issue, which says, shall the current term limits of 2 years per terms for the office of mayor and 2 four-year terms for council members be eliminated, yes or no? Those are the types of questions that you may think about placing on the ballot should you wish to move ahead. In order to move ahead, we would need to take several actions. Those actions would be needed to be completed by early March. Those actions are outlined in your staff report and require essentially the adoption of four resolutions. An important consideration in all of this is obviously the cost of conducting an election. This would be considered a special municipal election since it occurs outside of our regular municipal election cycle. And even though there is a statewide primary that's going to be held in June, the costs for placing a ballot measure on the June ballot by the city would be approximately $28,600, and those are we received an estimate of those costs from the county clerk's office. You might ask, well, why is this so high? It's again because this is a special election, and in the county, election costs are shared by those that are involved in the election. In this case, right now, the only other jurisdiction that within the county that has a special election or will be having an election in June will be Morro Bay, which has a council primary election that's held every 2 years, I believe. And other than that, there has been some talk about that Rio Grande may be putting forward a couple of ballot measures. Should they choose to do so, it's possible that these costs could go down some, but probably not a lot. The other point is that these costs are not budgeted at the present time. As illustrated, the city of Pismo Beach conducted a special election in June of 2008 for their sales tax, and that cost the city about $30,000. And the city of Arroyo Grande had a special election in June of 2010, and that measure cost approximately $17,000. It should be noted that November's election, which is a general election, again, because you'll have so many jurisdictions participating, the costs will be significantly less. The base costs for an election in November for the city will be between $10,000 and $12,000. Staff referenced in the staff report the option of conducting a mail-in ballot, because the city of San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara recently did that. We listed that information in the staff report, but I need to clarify that for you. Doing further research, the city is actually prohibited, except in a very rare circumstance, for doing a mail-out ballot. That's reserved primarily for charter cities, and the only exceptions to that are if you are filling a council vacancy and the time to fill a council vacancy does not coincide with the general election, you're able to do a mail-out ballot. And that staff's recommendation is this case is that you review your alternatives and then prepare and then provide direction to staff on whether or not to proceed with the necessary resolutions. And that concludes the staff report. Both myself and the city attorney are available if you've got any questions.
Thank you very much. Do we have questions?
I have one.
Go ahead.
Of course, I've forgotten it now. I don't think this, I recall having heard at some point, but I don't think it was in this particular staff report, that there are other cities that do not have term limits. What's happening around the county on this?
Most cities do not have term limits across the county.
Okay.
We're the exception more than the rule in that case.
Thank you.
Okay. Smolar?
Yes. You referenced Section 2304. I noticed there's a second paragraph there. Would you explain to everyone what that means? Because that sure seems to me like it talks about after a period of 2 years, someone can run again.
And that's essentially correct. And I'll ask the city attorney to clarify, but I think that's correct.
Okay. So the only limitation is that there has to be a two-year period between your consecutive 2 years?
No,
consecutive two terms, pardon me.
Right.
Okay. All right. And this, how long ago was this? Well, this is approved, it said, in 1996, that particular section, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. In the past, has anyone on this council asked for this before?
In terms of the elimination of term limits?
That's correct.
Not to my knowledge.
All right. Thank you.
Do you have any questions?
Yes, please.
Go.
You indicate that to add a second measure on the June ballot, the cost would be an estimated additional $600. Would that be the same in November, and would that be the same for like a second and third issue?
There would be additional cost, but primarily, and Donna may help me with it, but primarily what you see there are base costs. And so if it were to go in November, the $10,000 to $12,000 would be your base costs. And what makes up the difference between the added measures is primarily printing costs, because if you add an additional measure, it's going to cost more to print that particular material. And the actual cost for adding a measure is an additional measure is estimated at $600, because I think that gives you three pages, if I'm not mistaken.
What about for November?
We don't have... Okay, I'm sorry, I'm corrected, but it would still follow along the
Somewhere
same lines.
Somewhere in that vicinity. So if you had four additional they would be like about 600 apiece.
Roughly.
Or whatever.
In addition to your base cost.
Right. Okay. Okay. I think those are my questions. Thank you.
Okay. I have no questions of staff at this time. This is a business item, and we will open it up to the public if anyone wishes to come forward.
Good evening. My name is Anita Schauer, and I live at 867 North 6th Street in Grover. There are five of us sitting here tonight, and something this important you're just going to decide upon tonight when you have a population of 13,132 people. I find this to be absolutely ridiculous. You make us all, it's a stupid thing to do. If you're going to do this, you should rent an arena and invite the whole city and have everyone weigh in on this. You can't possibly think that this can happen in front of five people tonight. Thank you.
Liz Dukas-White, North Grover Beach. Why this is coming on this agenda at this particular time is a very interesting point. The problem with the longer term limits is our city is already up for sale when it comes to certain positions, and we must eliminate that. We cannot get ingrained in saying, okay, this is the way we're doing business. This small amount of people, this large of a decision, the cost factor, it just doesn't make any sense. And we've got to, the reason why there are term limits is very well longstanding knowledge why we have term limits. We must keep them. Thank you.
Anybody else? If none, we'll close it, bring it back to
measure. I'd like to see something of real significance, like maybe our long-term road maintenance issue come back, something that is going to really make a significant difference in our town. So if we're going to go in that direction, I would like to see us put something of real substance that is, as I said, going to be a real benefit to the residents of Grover Beach. Hmm.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Peterson?
I'm sure I voted in favor of term limits. It sounded like a good idea at the time, and I think we're finding statewide is that we end up with a lot of people in positions for 4 years who don't really know what they're doing, don't have a chance to learn their jobs, and then they're out before they're able to do anything, and they keep kicking the can down the road. And so I think that we have functioned fine the way it is, and I think that we'll probably continue to function fine. However, the whole point of the democratic process is that the 13,100 plus people in the city have their opportunity to vote. And we do have an arena here. We have public comment, and those 13,100 people are welcome to come and say what they think about this if they're not comfortable with it or if they are. And so I think I'm willing to trust the democratic process. I would be willing to have people vote on it again. I'm not willing to spend $28,000 that we don't have on something that I think is really going to not make a big difference over the long term. I think it's one of those things that we could include when other things are included in a November election when it's not so expensive or when the city has the funds to do it at a later date.
Okay. Ms. Molnar?
Thank you. I agree that we do not have the right to spend $28,000 at this time. We're asking people to accept a water increase. I don't think it's really fair of us to spend $28,000 at this time on something that actually, now that I have looked at the term limits and find out that someone can rerun again after 2 years, then they have two more terms, I don't understand why we have this consideration for the ballot at all. So I'm totally against any type of initiative that's going to involve any increasing of term limits at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Either now or November.
Okay, well, I am the one that asked to put this before the council. I do not like term limits. I think it's up to the citizens in the community. If they do not like the job that's being done, they vote the person out of office. If they're in favor of what that person is accomplishing, then they keep them in office. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that a mayor can really make a big difference in a city serving just 4 years. With the term limits, yes, he can. A person, mayor, could drop out for 2 years and then run for re-election. But what happens in that two-year interim period to the city could totally change the direction of where it was going and what it was trying to accomplish. So I would like to see the citizens of the community have the option to do away with term limits. Everything that I have read and looked at in the mm-hmm. newspapers in this state for the last year or 2 years indicate to me that people are very unhappy with term limits. It has, to my opinion, a lot of the problems that the state has right now are a direct result of term limits. We have people in Sacramento that are newly elected that don't really have a handle on how to run the city, how to run the state, rather. And as a result, the state, in my opinion, is probably being pretty much run by the clerks that have been working in Sacramento for the last 20 years. They keep their jobs even when new personnel come in that are elected by the citizens. So I think term limits was a big mistake. I think we need to go back to where the people can make a choice, and if a person is in office and doing a good job, then I think they ought to be able to stay in office instead of doing their best for a given period of time, and then regardless of how good a job they're doing, they're out. You're gone. And I personally don't think that's good. I did not know when I brought this forth to the council what the cost was going to be. I concur with you that that's an expensive proposition. I would like to have you keep in the back of your mind that the next item on the agenda is a discussion regarding placing a measure on the ballot regarding revising the business tax certificate. That was also asked to be brought back to the council. And if that issue were to go on the ballot along with the issue concerning term limits, that reduces the cost tremendously. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, both time maybe for this community to consider becoming a charter city versus a general law city. And if we did that, that would make a significant difference in how we approach term limits. Would it not? Could you give me a little bit of background on that?
Well, I will simply cover it briefly and then ask the city attorney to amplify. But I had discussed and will be bringing back for the council probably in March the proposition of converting from a general law city to a charter city. And the reason that I had suggested that the council consider placing that kind of a ballot measure before the voters is essentially it would give the council an opportunity with much community input to essentially rewrite the city's constitution and how it operates and make it less dependent on state law in terms of governing its own affairs. And within that ability to establish your own constitution, so to speak, you have the flexibility, if you so desire, to incorporate changing term limits as a part of that charter format. I believe that's correct, City Attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. The City Manager is exactly correct. One of the items that the Charter City can dictate is method of elections. And if the Council was to consider a new charter to be written and put before the voters, part of that charter could dictate both how elections are conducted, when they are conducted, as well as what term limits would be imposed, if any, at that point in time. That's one of the, at least, expressed reasons that one-fourth of the cities in California are charter cities. is that a charter allows the city to control local municipal affairs and local police powers and not defer to the state codes, to the what's called the general law city, which operates under the government code. With matters that are of statewide concern and matters that pertain to financing that's obtained through other sources other than local sources, grants, funds, loans, etc., state law would still be applicable even if the charter city was created. But with regard to local municipal affairs, a charter controls how the city is run.
Thank you. Okay, with that explanation, that's probably all I have. Do you have any further discussion, or are we ready to proceed with the motion?
I do. Thank you. In regards to the discussion of charter cities, is this something that we're going to try to get ready for November?
That will be up to the entire council's review. I will indicate that it is a much longer process than simply the normal one, that normal procedure you use for placing a ballot item in front of the council, in front of the voters. Essentially, you have to draft the charter. And then there's a series of public meetings that have to be held over a three-month period of time before you can actually make a final decision on whether or not to place the matter before the voters.
Then I think if this is something that we're going to seriously consider, then we shelve this particular issue of term limits until we decide whether or not we're going to take on the issue of becoming a charter city, because that would take care of it completely at the time anyway. Then we wouldn't be spending the money. So that's actually what I would suggest we do tonight.
I'd like to see us revisit it, not necessarily give staff direction to revisit it when we revisit the charter city consideration.
Makes sense to me.
All right. Let's have a motion.
I don't think we need
it's
a motion,
just direction to staff.
Oh, that's
do we need a motion for that?
No.
Okay. Staff, are you satisfied with the direction?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, let's move on to the next item number 7, which is the discussion regarding place and measure on the ballot regarding revising the business tax certificate program.
Yes, Ms. Oops. Excuse me, I forgot to turn it off. Yes, Mew. It's the Right to Vote on Taxes Act, and if you can excuse me for a second, I need to try and deaden this. There it is. No. The current chapter, go back in November of 1996, California voters passed Proposition 218, Right to Vote on Taxes Act. This amendment to the Constitution, as I've indicated, requires that, especially times when you're looking at increasing taxes, fees, or services, it requires that the measure be placed in front of the people. And this is one of those cases. It should be noted that we've had the same business tax certificate program now for almost 20 years, and it has not been updated in that time. Most of the businesses within the city are now charged the annual flat fee. It's been a flat fee all that time, and most of them are charged a rate of $55 per year. That's regardless of the size business that you have, the amount or volume of business that you're doing. So essentially, a small mom and pop pays the same as a Vons grocery store, for instance. So there's an equity issue involved. There are a few exceptions to that rate, and those exceptions are outlined, and there are very few of them, but are outlined in the report. Staff has researched a variety of formulas available for calculating business tax certificate rates and the growing trends among programs for other jurisdictions. It really, in doing that review, it's become apparent that what needs to be done is not just the rate structure needs to be changed, but the entire ordinance needs to be rewritten. It's very cumbersome. It's actually difficult to implement and to enforce. If the council wants to move in that direction, we would actually suggest that the entire ordinance be rewritten. We'd also suggest that you move to a rate that is based on gross receipts received. Some time ago, in developing our recommendation, took a survey of California cities, and I believe I passed that survey out with the supplemental information that I provided. And most of the cities that we surveyed across California actually have gross receipt systems. This allows for some equity within the system, and so everyone pays their fair share, so to speak. The other way to do is the way to approach this is to continue with a flat fee. We've also provided you a comparison of what other cities are paying throughout the county, and you'll note that the proposed amount or rate structure fits in well with those cities that are based on gross receipts, but in the county there are two or three that are still flat rate cities. My guess is the reason that they are flat rate cities is that they have not been changed in a very long time, and largely for the same issue that you're facing. In order to move forward with this, staff would suggest that you move forward with provide the direction to staff to revise the ordinance and bring back the ordinance and the rate structure for your complete review, and then based on that review, determine whether or not to set it for election, because ultimately what you would be placing on the ballot is the entire ordinance revision rather than just the rate structure. So that's going to take some time, and it's going to be worth some discussion. The other part about the process is that since this is obviously going to impact the business community, I would think that you would want to do an outreach to the business community and educate them as to what we were attempting to do, the background, and to ensure that you had their input into the process as well. The reason I bring that procedure up is that should you wish to go forward at this point, obviously that would probably take longer than the time we have available to get this to a June ballot, simply because you'd have between $20,000 and $50,000. That sounds like a large swing, and the reason that it's difficult to get a handle on is right now the only information that we have to gauge the impact is based on what we know through the sales tax program, and we're able to basically understand what sales tax is producing on a gross receipts basis, and we can calculate that for businesses that pay sales tax, but obviously for those that don't, we don't know what that impact might be. So that's why that range is as wide as it is. Currently, I will mention that the amount of dollars we're collecting with the current program is about $73,000. And there is the cost for operating that program. We have a part-time staff person that basically is responsible for implementing the program at present. So consequently, from my perspective, you have a couple of different options. First, you need to consider whether you want to proceed at all with the revision to the program. Should you do that, then you need to consider whether you wish to go forward on a June 5th or a November ballot. Largely, staff sentiment would be to recommend that we go ahead with the November ballot if that's what you desire. Fiscal impact is pointed out in the report, and I've already mentioned it. Ultimately, there would be some costs associated with setting the ballot before the electorate, and what you could expect to see initially is probably an increase in the revenue item in the neighborhood of $20,000 to $50,000. That concludes my report, and I'm available for any questions you might have.
Okay, who wants to start off?
No questions, thank
None?
You.
No questions.
No, I have
Good.
Questions. So we would continue to get this as a yearly fee, because I know some cities do it twice a year.
You know, you'd have to clarify that for me.
Yes, it's an annual fee.
It's an annual fee.
So you keep it as an
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
That would be what's recommended at this
as
point.
As an annual fee. Okay. All right. And we are not talking about adjusting an initial startup fee, you know, when somebody first comes in as a business.
No.
That will remain what it currently is?
Yeah, that was not. In fact, the council actually discussed an application fee a year and a half ago and decided against it. So.
Well, I think she's talking about the first-year fee when there's no gross receipts. If it's an initial startup business, then we would create a rate that's for an initial startup.
Okay.
So that it could be lower. It could be the minimum fee. A lot of cities use the minimum fee as the startup fee.
That's what I was asking. Plus, if it's involved with the fire department, I know they have a particular fee when they come out.
There's a fire
inspection
fee.
This is a one-time fee. Okay. Does this take into account home-based businesses?
They would still also have the home occupation permit, which they need to pay, which is a one-time fee. And it would also be
Based on gross receipts.
And has there been any discussion as how you would look into, would this be good faith? You know, they would just send in a form saying my gross receipts for the year was...
It would be easy. Yeah, it would be easy for those that have sales tax to figure out pretty much what their gross receipts are, unless they're a business that also has non-sales taxable items, such as our supermarket, which has a lot of non-taxable items. At this point, I do not know that we have looked into what a mechanism would be to ensure.
If I'm not mistaken, what can be included, and I think it is in our current ordinance, but you have the opportunity to request an audit.
Yeah, we could go in and audit
if you have a suspicion. So it would be based on, for example, what I do with many of my clients. What they paid in 2012 is based on 2011.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. No further questions. This is a general business item, and we will open it up to the public. If anybody wishes to speak, come forward. There being none, we will close it, bring it back to the council. Have any further discussion? If not...
I have some discussion.
Sure.
I agree that it should be rewritten for simplicity. Just to make it less cumbersome and easier to manage. I think it should be equitable among all businesses. The November ballot, I think, is without question, because I believe it has to be vetted with the business owner, so that's something that I think we just must do. But I would certainly be in...
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to the next item number 8, which is the status report regarding the redevelopment agencies. City manager?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, this report is actually a status report. It is the consideration of a letter to support the extension of the agency and also a request to set a special meeting to take additional action. I know I don't need to repeat for you the fact that we're dealing with the impacts of AB 1X26 that requires the elimination of the agency by February 1st. At your last meeting, the agency began taking some of the actions that you're required to by designating, or the city began taking some of the actions that you're required to by designating the city as the successor agency for the city, which will work with an appointed oversight board in terms of winding down the actions of the agency. In addition to that action, there are at least three additional actions that the City Council agency will be asked to take, and they need to be taken over a very, very short time, again given the fact that February 1st is the designated dissolution date. Those actions would include actually consideration as to whether the city wants to continue as a successor agency for the housing programs. And as you know, we have the contract with the Vernon Construction, and we still have the property up on Hillcrest. The one caveat to that, which I'll cover in more detail when we meet again, is that at the present time, current law indicates that dollars that are in your low and moderate income housing fund will also be redistributed if they're not encumbered. So that has significant needs. It plays a significant role in your consideration, because ultimately you could find yourself in a situation where you retain the obligation, but you don't have the dollars to actually provide staffing or support for that obligation. So that's something that you'll need to consider. Another item that you'll need to consider will be updating your obligation schedule. The obligation schedule is then forwarded to the successor agency and outlines the obligations that the agency was responsible for and that the successor agency will ultimately be responsible for. Additional action will be required in accordance with the new state law that actually asks the council and agency board to affirm whether they did or did not take action to waive or forgive any of their internal loans prior to the dissolution of the agency. So that's another action that needs to be taken. It's a very fluid situation, I might say, for the simple reason that there are two efforts that are afloat in terms of modifying the action that had been previously taken by the legislature. Perhaps the most important part of those actions is review of SB 659, which is actually legislation that has been offered by Senator Padilla and is supported by the League of California Cities and the California Redevelopment Association. And the what that bill is all about is getting a two-month extension on the termination date. It's been proposed as urgency legislation, so it needs to be acted on by February 1st, which is realistically around the corner. Will that happen? It's hard to say. If it does, the subsequent actions that I'm asking you to take at this future meeting may not be quite as time dependent. The other item that is also making its way through the legislature is another piece of urgency legislation, and that's SB 654. And that's offered by Daryl Steinberg, and essentially what that would so those are staff's recommendations at this point, and that concludes this report.
Thank you, Bob. Questions?
Yes. So are you asking us tonight to For the letter?
Yes.
Okay. And scheduling the meeting.
Right.
I will let you know that I may not be here.
Okay.
I will try to be back on time.
Okay.
But I already have a scheduled out-of-town visit.
Okay.
No questions.
No. I'm ready to make a motion.
This is a regular business item.
It's a staff report. Or is it?
I think we have nobody here from the public to open it to. So we'll continue with the board. Do we have any further discussion, or are you ready to make a recommendation to staff?
I am ready to make a recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
That we follow staff's recommendation and schedule a special meeting for the evening of Monday, January 23rd, and authorize the mayor to send a letter on behalf of the city to the legislature and governor in support of SB 659.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. I only want to comment that I appreciate the letter, the draft letter. Mm-hmm. I very well worded, good letter.
Thank you.
And there's only one. You have indicated you will not be here that evening. Is that correct?
She's going to try.
I'm going to try. Depends on traffic coming from Stockton.
Okay. Okay. Boys, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passed. We have concurrence. Let's go ahead. Well, wait a minute. Yeah, let's take item 9, and then we will go back and do the council committee reports. Council?
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, council members. Staff was directed to bring before you for your discussion the issue of potential adoption of an anti-nepotism policy. This issue has been before the City Council in 2004. In 2004, after discussing the issue, the council decided that it did not wish to move forward with considering an adoption of an anti-nepotism policy. An anti-nepotism policy basically is a policy that is directed at precluding familiar or intimate relationships to exist in line of command, for lack of a better word. In other words, when a supervisor and somebody who that person supervises are in a either familiar or an intimate relationship, the presumption is that that relationship creates a potential or an apparent or an actual conflict of interest, that there is a good potential for favoritism. And the courts have allowed cities to control those types of relationships and to preclude them from the workplace through such policies. I've included in your staff report and my staff report to you a copy of the initial draft of the policy that was presented in 2004. I'm here to answer any questions you might have and await direction if you wish us to pursue that farther. If direction is given, the next step would be we would bring a resolution for your adoption with a formal policy that's shaped based on the discussion we have here today. Another option is to bring this item back again for further vetting and discussion. I will tell you that if the council is looking to move the item forward to a potential adoption, we would need to engage in conversations with the bargaining units because at minimum this would be a meet and consult item.
Thank you very much. Any questions of council?
I have a few.
I'm
curious as to why it's come back now.
Direction from council, and actually was, I believe, at a meeting that I wasn't present at.
Well, me either, I think. I
wasn't there either. Were you there?
I didn't recall it being brought up. I had the same question.
Yeah.
I'm glad you asked it. Do you recall who brought it up?
I since the only person that's not here is the mayor, I would assume that it may have been here him. But we have been directed to, or at least it was my impression that the majority of the council wished to see this item. But if not, then the solution is really simple. You can direct us to do nothing.
Well, I do have a couple of other questions before we start directing. I wanted to clarify. Does this mean then that a city employee
could not have a family member run for city council, because then that family member would be their superior, supervisor, and what it really means.
The policy as written and the draft as before you does not contemplate control of any council members or people running for council. It's simply strictly for employment purposes.
Okay.
If we want to expand that, that's why we're talking to
you. So for these purposes, city council members are not employees?
For any purposes, city councils are not employees with the exception of workers' comp.
I thought I was an employee. Okay.
Can we get workers' comp?
Before, hold on just a second. Before we go any further, everybody was so surprised at this item being on the agenda and that it didn't go any place when it was on before. Before we get involved in any further deep discussions about ramifications of this, do we honestly feel we have consensus that we may want to move forward with this item? Or is everybody just no?
Well, I'd like to ask the questions before we make a decision.
Very good. Then let's continue. I just wanted to make sure that we weren't just wasting a lot of time.
No, actually, are you asking?
No.
Go ahead.
So my other question would be, again, the definition of employee, maybe it's not relevant. Would that mean that a city council could not have a family member on one of the commissions that it appoints?
As drafted, right, or as the draft was prepared, none of those relationships or potential relationships were being contemplated in the draft. The draft simply applies to city employees.
Okay. Thank you. Those are my questions.
Okay. Ms. Molnar.
Do we currently have any employees that this would affect if we went forward with this?
I believe so.
Oh, we do. Oh, and then what would happen to them?
Depending on whether or not there would be a grandfathering clause that would be a part of the policy, they may or may not be affected. Their working relationship or conditions may or may not be affected.
So then we could be looking at future employees is what we're looking at here then, if we put in a grandfather clause.
That is correct.
All right, thank you.
I have a comment. I think it's a healthy policy myself, mm-hmm. but it wasn't a burning desire of mine to see it. But since it's here, as I said, I think it's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other comments?
I guess I had one more question. Are we currently having problems with it? Has it been brought forward because it's?
I'm not aware of any issues that would directly involve this.
I was quite surprised when it appeared because I don't recall somebody asking that this be brought forth. So what is our consensus then?
Well, how much staff time would it take to do something like this?
It would not be staff intensive to at least draft an item and to come before you. I think unless you have some major concerns about the verbiage that is presented to you from the 2004 draft, it would probably take some refining and it would not take a lot of time to return.
And would it be considered something that's best practice that we should have in place? Is this one of the things we should be moving toward if we're going to be operating with best practice?
I don't know that I would describe it as a best practice. There is a number of cities that have nepotism policies. There are numbers that don't. Mm-hmm. I've generally experienced them in larger cities where there is a greater issue, B, a larger opportunity to provide equivalent employment in other departments or other places within the city. So I couldn't describe it as a best practice or not a best practice. It is a policy that is used. It is a policy that deals with the issue of perceived or potential favoritism, conflict of interest, and it's a policy that has been upheld by the courts as a valid exercise of an employer's right in a workplace.
Okay. Well, Section 5 actually addresses quite a few of the issues.
Mm-hmm.
and it allows someone to continue to work as long as there are no problems. Mm-hmm. So I actually think maybe we should. Would that be considered the grandfather clause right there? I mean,
yeah, I think so.
It says they can continue their employment if it doesn't affect city operations.
I think that alone is not a grandfather clause because it does not deal with those who are already in existence. If the city council wishes to see a version that would include a grandfathering clause, then we would add that in.
I think if we go forward with this, we should have a grandfather clause, yes.
As I said, I don't have a really burning desire one way or the other. I just think it would be a good tool and...
Okay, well, let's make a decision. How many would like to see the staff return with a draft policy for council's consideration and adoption?
I would.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Yes.
Okay. We have consensus?
No urgency.
No, my understanding is the majority of you wish this item to be put before you. And, again, it will not be coming to you in the one or two meetings. It will probably be a little bit further down the road.
That's fine. I'm sure.
Okay.
And you will include the grandfather clause.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to adjourn the city council meeting and convene the improvement agency. May we have a roll call, please?
Here.
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 Okay, and I will open this to the public. Anybody wish to make a comment, come forward. Seeing none, we'll close it, bring it back to the council. The first item on the agenda is the consent agenda.
I would move that we approve the minutes as submitted.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion on item number 1A1 to approve minutes as submitted. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 4-0. Next item is the discussion regarding Grover Beach Municipal Network, and that is the city manager, Executive Director Perrault.
Yes, members of the board. This is simply an update and to let you know that the drafting of the Grover Beach Municipal Network, it's been talked about for a long time, but it is just about completed as we speak. The network, as you'll remember, was to be based on the adopted technology master plan that was adopted back in, I think, February of 2010, and subsequently the agency board authorized the retention of two consultants. One was Digital West and the other one was Muni Services, and their tasks were to digital services to actually identify and work out a budget and an implementation plan for at least getting the network started. And Muni Services, part of that plan was to take a look at networks and that have operated across the country and make some recommendations on how such a network should be set up and operated and governed, and also to take a look at what the target market is here in Grover Beach. And all of that work has been completed and is will be ready by the end of this week for presentation to the council. And so essentially what I had intended to ask was that the council set a special workshop meeting to receive the report of staff and the consultants regarding the network. And so what I'm at this point going to ask you to do is to conduct that meeting as a part of the meeting on the 23rd, if I could.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm good with that. But
can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. Not to show my ignorance here, but what is the purpose of the municipal network?
Well, the municipal network was to, and I should get you a copy of the technology
master plan. Yeah, because I wasn't here.
was to take a look at, first of all, the fact that we have Pacific Crossing here, which is the major conduit between the United States and Asia, and to see if, in conjunction with having that facility here, we could actually develop and put in place a broadband fiber optic network that would have the capability of high-speed connectivity to the internet and potentially connect with a trans-Pacific cable as an economic development tool. It was thought that if we had this network in place, it would provide the city with a competitive advantage in terms of attracting potential high-tech industries, if you will. And that was the basic genesis for the development.
No breaks.
Step on the gas. All right. That's it? Okay. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it. Let us now close the improvement agency, go back to the city council meeting, and do council reports. Karen, do you, Ms. Bright?
I had no meetings between our last meeting and this one. However, there is an APCD meeting January 25th.
Very good. Let's move on to Ms. Molnar.
I probably had the most meetings. there was a meeting of the RAC, the Water Resource Advisory Committee, on January 4th. The committee is still working on the Integrated Regional Water Management Program update and the planning grants. Also, there was discussion about future concerns over fracking, and they have they will be addressing those issues at the next meeting. And that was basically the RAC. I also, as you know, was on the IWMA, and that was the plastic bag ordinance. And as everyone knows from reporting, that it did pass 8-5. The interesting things that came about, and it is public knowledge, is that the city of Atascadero is actually considering leaving the JPA over this ordinance because they do not want to participate in it. And the PASO actually requested a super vote, which means it had to pass by 8, which it did do. And there are more things to come before that ordinance is actually going to be in place, and it will be in place October 1st. That was my last meeting with the IWMA, and Councilmember Bright will be taking over from this point on.
Yippee.
And I do have a meeting coming up this week. I will be representing the city, taking the mayor's place at the SCAT on Wednesday and the Zone 3 on Thursday. And then also the RAC again for the planning for the grant applications on Thursday morning.
Good thing you don't have a life, huh?
Thank you very much. Debbie?
I have not had any meetings. They'll all be next week. However, I did circulate a letter that was sent to me by the Economic Vitality Corporation, and it was a letter to the APCD asking that their building design and construction cluster group be invited to comment, and the business community be invited to comment on decisions that are made. I won't go into the details. And the reason I wanted to circulate it is because I wanted to highlight again the cluster committees that the EVC is doing and the benefits of them. What they've had, they've made huge strides with the county planning people, working directly with the county planning people to streamline planning procedures to be more economy friendly and more business friendly. And this is another thing that they're working on here, is to promote more business input. So I wanted to just throw this out here so you can see some of the things that they're doing, and to say that they set a great example for us in Grover Beach in doing the same thing. And that's why I circulated it to everybody. So next meeting, I will have more to report.
I don't know of a community that doesn't continue to work on planning department and the mm-hmm. public and better service.
Mm-hmm.
Every community constantly works on that.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Okay. The sanitation district had its first meeting in January. And as usual, at the first meeting in January, they elect officers on the board at the request of the district administrator and the district legal counsel for purposes of coordination and continuation with the personnel problems that we have had in the last year that continue. One of the three has been resolved. We still have a couple that are not resolved. But as a result of those issues ongoing, it was requested that I continue on for another year as chairman of the board. Motion was made by Mayor Ferrara and seconded by Mr. Guerrero that I will continue as chairman of the board this year. And Matt Guerrero from Oceano will be the vice chairman. In addition to that, the board approved and recommended.
Follow up.
Okay, it's my understanding that from the district administrator that the city of Grover Beach does belong to it, as well as City of Arroyo Grande and Pismo Beach. So that's one of the reasons we agreed to get into that organization, both of them. And the only other thing of significance is Director Ferrara did bring to us the first draft of the update on the district emergency response plan. That's another one of the items that the state mandates that we have, and it hasn't been updated for quite some time. We had it in our budget to do, but Director Ferrara has been involved in that sort of program when he was employed by the state. And when he saw the budget that we had set up for it, he said, no, let's not spend that money. I can do that. It won't cost the district anything. So he, for the last 4 months, has worked on that update and presented the first draft to us at the last meeting and done a very good job. I think he's done a great job on it. That's it for Sanitation District. That's all I have to report. If nobody has anything else,
I wanted to comment on I should have mentioned it as the chamber rep, but the Chamber of Commerce had a very, very successful annual installation meeting on Friday evening, and I believe raised more money than they have in the past, and they're delighted about that because they're worried about our funding going away. And I think they had a higher attendance than we've ever seen before at their inauguration. So it was a great meeting, another great chamber meeting.
I have been to the last couple, including this one, and I agree with you. Yeah. I think the crowd, the number of people there was much better than before. I think it's also important that it was catered mm-hmm. by a local, the Rib Line, down on Grand Avenue, the new business we have in the city, did the catering on it, and they did an outstanding job.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very well done. Thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate that. Okay, there being no further, we will go to council for closed session announcement, please.
Certainly, it is the intent of the city council to meet in closed session on two items. First one is two items of anticipated litigation. The second one is real property negotiations with regard to the Hillcrest Tower site.
They never have it figured out.
Okay, thank you. We will now go into closed session.
The silent...